It's kind of
lame.
I was going to say quaint, but yeah, lame pretty much sums it up.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Dawson's Creek. Da 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 da. Dawson's Creek. Season 6, Episode 1. The kids are all right. Now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, my God. What was that? Like sports cheering, and then it was the horror. I mean, this is a full service podcast, culturally speaking. Hi, Tara.
Hi.
Hi, Dave.
Hi,
bye, Dave. Hi, listeners. This Friday, June 5th, we are kicking off Pride Month on Again With This. See, full service. Mm-hmm. With episode 290. Can you believe that? Let's watch Busy Phillips judge RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. That's season 1, episode 2, RuPaul's Gaffin. That's on Paramount Plus. Were we ever so young? I am very excited. Please join us. We would love to hear from you what you thought about the episode, and you can hear from us.
We would love to hear from you, and we would love you to sit tight for a minute because there is more. We have an announcement. We are revising our campaign targets to be a little more appealing, getting you more quickly to where we think you probably want to go. So since we're very close to the milestone, we're going to unlock stickers when we hit $3,000 in monthly pledges. And we've been plugging the stickers. This is a set including Suck a Bag of Farts on Dawson's forehead, Rock Bottom, the holographic Who Fucked sticker, and more. So thank you. This is a set you want. So these are going to be available to all Patreon members, but you will only have 1 week to submit your request for them. And this is just going to be a Google form where you enter the address you want them mailed to. We're not going to save your information. Don't worry.
But let's talk about full season recaps, because
yes,
we have a feeling that you want us to. And those will now start getting worked into our release schedule when we hit $3,500 in pledges. To make it easier for you to join and only get the perks that you really want, you can also join on Apple Podcasts for $5 a month. That gets you the audio only, but if that's your jam, go for it.
Yes, and that includes the ad-free versions of the main show as well. It's just none of the other jazz, not the Discord, etc. So we're also going to be sunsetting the tiers below the $5 level for new members. Current members at the $2 level will be grandfathered in for the first 3 months, which means for those 3 months, all members will get all perks. But after that, you're going to have to join the club at the $5 a month level, which, by the way, is only $4 a month if you make it annual. It's a hot tip for you.
Mm-hmm. As proof of concept, we are going to start rolling out full season recaps for one show before we hit our goal, just so you understand that this is a world you do want to live in, and members at the $10 level and up get to vote on which it is. Just a few of the ones we're thinking about to start with: Freaks and Geeks, My So-Called Life, Dr. Odyssey, aka Dr. Fuckboat, mm-hmm, Young Americans.
Yes.
Tempting list.
New episodes of our full season, one season wonder recaps will roll out once a month on Thursdays between Again With Them episodes. And when we hit that $3,500 goal, we will start working those into our regular schedule. For each $500 we get in pledges above that threshold, we will add another episode per month until they're happening every Thursday.
And we still do want to talk to Gina Fator and Dave Holmes, so our special episodes with them will happen at the $3,250 and $3,750 milestones. Now is the time to gift subscriptions to your friends, dads, grads, anyone. Encourage everyone in your social group to get involved. And remember, again, if you sign up for that annual subscription, it works out to only $4 a month. againwiththispodcast.com/club. Let's go.
One more time. againwiththispodcast.com/club. All of this information is at the website. Okay, let's get into the season 6 premiere. The cold open is a full reset of almost everybody's plot lines, narrated by Joey. So I'm going to just do this first before we break everyone into their silos. First of all, even though we pick up back at the airport as Joey considers actually using her refundable ticket to Paris, to go to Paris. Present day Joey tells us she didn't go to Paris, but she totally could have because in her opinion, Dawson was right. Clip two.
My life was waiting for me out there, but that doesn't mean I had to max out my one and only credit card and fly halfway across the world to find it. Screw that.
I mean, you're 19. Like, this is the time to do that kind of dumb shit.
Yeah. Especially if you are from a, again, summer community resort town. Like, yes, you could make your entire tuition in tips, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably not at Worthington, but like, if you're not doing that, you don't want to be anywhere around there. It's not relaxing. Like, that pier that you're reading on will be wall to wall with people fishing and suntanning. So just leave town.
Well, or do both. Like, you could just go to Paris for a week and then come back and work at the yacht club and make your tips. Like, duh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she didn't. She spent the summer in Capeside reading on the dock in a very uncomfortable looking position and meeting a new boy who was a fellow server at the yacht club. But she turned on him when he said he thought he was in love with her. And this little snippet of the retelling is one of many shots that suggest there was a whole other episode that got like broken down for parts for this cold open. Like, this boy does not get a name. Why bother to cast him? Like, just shoot the back of a crew guy's head or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, Pacey and Audrey had tons of fun in Hollywood, if by Hollywood you mean bobbing their heads in his car in front of a green screen of Melrose Place opening credits ass B-roll, which you can see in the visual aids. Jack hung out with Eric until Eric dumped him by email for a younger, cuter person we don't see. What we do see is Jack fake stretching in the hall at Graham's house as he waits for her to take her tea to her bedroom and then sneaks a guy out of his room. So Jack is fooling around with guys. It's just happening off screen. The reason that Jen's parents wanted to get her and her bucket hat to the Hamptons was to tell her they were getting divorced, which she thought was the healthiest thing they had ever done. And you know, everyone says the last thing you do before getting a divorce is acquire more joint property to fight over. It's a smart financial move. Anyway, Jen then, according to Joey, had one of the best summers of her life, although what that actually entails does not make it into the montage or the episode. Like, what made her summer great? We don't know.
No.
Whose name is in the title of the show again? Oh, right. Clip three.
And then there's Dawson. Truth is, we didn't talk this summer. Not a word. Which is weird, I guess, but at the same time, not. I mean, I kept meaning to call him. I did, but 1 week turned into a month, and before you know it, here we are back at school. But what Dawson said that night, it definitely rang true. My life is waiting for me out there, I know it. And what's really cool is that I have absolutely no idea what to expect. But whatever it is, I'm ready for it. I'm excited. Bring it on.
Okay. It's one thing to be like, we didn't talk all summer before people had cell phones, but they have cell phones. And like, they would have been in touch. They also both have email. It's 2002.
Someone is going to get drunk and send someone a navel gazy email.
Yes.
Also, what is this like? I'm ready for it. Bring it on. Like, thank you for that very heartfelt introduction to a new tampon that definitely doesn't leak. But this is like not believable dialogue, even for this show or for Joey. Like, ugh.
Yeah. And I also can't believe, although I can, but I can't believe they did all that finale bullshit of backsliding into their old pattern only to have it not go anywhere at all. Like, if you didn't want to write what happened in the summer, like, you don't have to. It doesn't, like, this is not a good workaround.
No. Yeah, I was thinking that. Like, I don't know, maybe they should have done summer episodes.
Yeah.
I don't really remember. I feel like there was some sort of, not conflict, but dispute about whether this season was even going to happen or needed to happen, or it should have been like a, like, I remembered that it was shorter. I remember that incorrectly. It's not like 14 episodes or something, but maybe that's what should have happened. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
One tree hill it. Let's just get this over with.
Yeah, seriously. Anyway, new stuff in the credits. Dawson and Joey dancing from later in this episode. Joey smiling toothily. Pacey with a goatee. Joey doing the tongue thing on a street somewhere, the whole cast walking with the fake Boston skyline behind them from the After Hours episode. Same skyline, but now the whole cast, not just Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
And then old stuff that's new to the credits. Pacey throwing Audrey onto the bed in Florida. Audrey shooting pool with her boobs out. Audrey winking at Joey. Jen finishing her rendition of Bob O'Reilly. Jen and Jack walking in Boston, Joey humiliating herself with Charlie's band, and Dawson standing in the sand in Florida. Mm, and that's where we are. Moving on to our B plot. Boston's newest co-ed is Grams in Tarot Bang. Jen's first scene after the cold open is a rehash of her brief moment in the cold open. She is uncharacteristically happy because the Lindley divorce has restored her faith in humanity. Grams has just done a what have you done with my granddaughter if you ate her, spit her out joke that she almost sells, but not quite.
Almost. Yep.
When the phone rings and she starts cooing at Mr. Smalls, but don't get excited, we will not be seeing him again ever for the rest of this season. And when we see Jen next, she's bopping into her art history class and squealing when she sees she has chosen a seat next to Grams. Grams tried to tell her this morning, but couldn't get a word in edgewise amid Jen's monologue about how happy she was. But Grams attended one of Mr. Small's summer school classes and remembered how much she loves the classroom, deciding then and there to go back to school. Jen whines that Grams is not only embarrassing Jen into an early grave, she's also doing it for a man. Grams hisses at Jen to give her some credit. She's doing it for herself. Jen babbles that instead of art history, it should be math, because Jen's read it helps stave off early onset Alzheimer's, which is when the prof materializes next to Jen, asking if he's going to have to separate them, leaving Grams to glare at Jen for getting her in trouble. And then in her next class with Jack, Jen looks around nervously for Grams as though she wouldn't have demanded Grams' entire course schedule as soon as they were done in art history. Jack doesn't think the history of pop culture is Grams' speed, but Jen thinks Grams is crazy like a fox, and I guess we have to rehash this storyline, even though we already saw it on 90210 when Cindy went back to school when Brenda was a freshman.
Yeah. I mean, okay. And then it was, like, dumb, but it was also like, okay, you could see the embarrassment. Like, I would not have wanted to be sitting next to Barb in lecture, but Jen and Grams don't have that kind of, like, you're embarrassing me relationship.
No.
Like, they're good. Yes. This is not a good look. And once again, the writers continue not knowing what to do with Jen, which we'll explain where it goes this season, I suspect. Also, I don't know if you talk about this later in your notes, but have you ever seen a less pop culture prof looking dude than that guy?
No, the guy that Joey has to deal with in this episode looks more like a pop culture prof than this guy. But we'll get
yes,
to it.
Yes, thank you.
In the A plot, which we are now at, Joey's new prof makes her his victim, and nearly everyone else is too self-involved to remember her birthday, which, believe it or not, isn't a national holiday, even though we're talking about Queen Saint Joey.
And apparently is on, like, right around the same time of year as St. Kelly's
yes.
second canonical birthday. Someone call Dave Koz. You're needed on the Worthington set.
Oh, my God. Dave Koz just felt a twinge and doesn't know why. Someone who's thinking of me for the first time in 30 years. Anyway.
No. Leave me alone, dicks. I got my money. All right.
We open the A plot back at good old Worthington, watching Joey race through campus until she slams into a guy and knocks him on his ass and then freezes in horror for way too long as he just lies there saying she hits pretty hard for a girl. She does not hold a hand out to help him up, but does finally speak. Clip 4.
I'm so sorry. I'm late for something.
Ever heard of an alarm clock?
I said I'm sorry.
Well, sorry's not going to unbruise my ass now, is it?
And also, the, like, whatever, Elastica version of the Mary Tyler Moore theme. No, that's not allowed. I refuse to allow
it. But also, the said I was sorry is real throwback to season one Joey, who was, like, kind of a bitch. I didn't mind seeing her again.
Yeah. For someone who's supposed to be, again, not just sainted, but, like, really brilliant and organized and driven. She's, like, literally running late a lot and does not have nearly the insight you would expect. Like, it's always at the level of her graduation speech, but we'll hear more of that.
So inside, Joey tells a department assistant she's a little late for Professor Hetson, but the assistant says he's running a little late himself, which is, of course, when we all find out the guy with frosted tips, wearing an Aloha shirt, cargo shorts, and rubber flip-flops is Professor Hetson. And Joey says this, clip five.
Fudge.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
Fudge, all right. So then Pacey is parking his filthy car on campus, and Audrey in the passenger seat is saying they should wake the kid up. And they go back and forth, establishing that whoever this is, Pacey didn't want to give him a lift out. He grew up next door to Audrey, and his parents want him to go to Worthington. And then Pacey says the kid repeatedly bragged to him about how many times he has seen Audrey naked, which she doesn't believe, until Pacey says he knew about her tattoo, which is when she slams the roof and screams at him. Well, let's hear that. Clip six.
Wake up, you little perv!
What's this about you seeing me naked?
The f*** did you tell her?
That's what you told me, Chief.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a f*** lot. I can find you, and this is what I get?
I'm listening, Jack.
Remember the telescope in my bedroom? Well, I didn't really do much stargazing.
I'm so telling your father on you.
Go ahead, he had a peek too. But don't worry, he said really good things.
Okay, well then I'm telling your mother and she's gonna kick your ass, Jack.
Yeah, whatever. Let me out, I'll go take a piss.
What?
Oh my god. This is like when episode like 2 or 3 of Veronica Mars had to have Paris Hilton in it so that the show could, like, live.
Yes.
And it's about as successful.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but at least in that episode of Veronica Mars, there wasn't an implication that an adult man was peeping at a teenage girl through a telescope.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Then again, this is a show that is still treating the Pacey-Tamara relationship like it was a relationship and not, you know, assault.
Good point. Anyway, this episode airs 7 months after the premiere of The Osbournes on MTV. So they were actually like kind of on top of the zeitgeist, considering.
I guess.
But whatever. Jack Osbourne leaves to take a fucking piss. And that's a series wrap on him. Good riddance. Did not need more of that, actually.
No. Me neither.
Audrey gives Pacey a huge kiss because, she says, the end is nigh for them. None of the great couples make it in real life, like Sid and Nancy and Bonnie and Clyde and Joey and Dawson. And after establishing that Audrey's intentionally blowing off the first day of classes because nothing ever happens, she and Pacey further exposit that Audrey's father loved Pacey this summer, much to Audrey's chagrin, and set him up with a lead on a new job. She is nervous about Pacey becoming a boring 9-to-5er when he could go to work at any of the thousands of restaurants in Boston instead, but Pacey would like to have a little disposable income sometimes and take a shot at greatness. The party can't last forever, he says. She mimics him and then orders him to bring in her bag, so the start of Obnoxious Audrey is upon us, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah. When we resume with Joey and Hetson, he is reading something and chuckling, but apparently not at that. He is still amused that she said fudge. Also, as if the juvenile styling choices weren't enough, I think there's the super soaker behind him on the shelf in his office. You can see this in the visual aids. If it's not a super soaker, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. It's like hung in the style of like whatever samurai swords usually would be, or like there's like a backing. I don't know. All right, Hetsy.
Whatever papers Joey has given him include all of her biographical information because he notes that today is her birthday, something I don't think the show ever marked before. I don't think it's ever come up. He asks about her plans, and when she says she has none, he says it's just as well since she doesn't have much to celebrate. Her scholarship barely covers her expenses, and as he soon learns, she doesn't have a job. There's an opening for a research assistant in the English department. Is she interested? Her half-assed, sure, maybe, makes him snap that it's the kind of job students stab each other in the back for, so she should get more hyped up for it than that. He also notes that she has enrolled in her lit class, which, like, they're all lit classes.
Oh, that lit class. The one about lit.
Uh-huh.
It happens at 1:00.
Mm-hmm. It's in, you know, the classroom building. Anyway, she's only a sophomore. Joey brags that she's only a sophomore on paper and has read most of the books on the reading list, although she has to admit when he asks, she has not read Last Exit to Brooklyn, which apparently was a sponsor of this episode because it comes up 700 more times.
Mm-hmm.
If she can finish it before class, which is today at 3, he will let her in. And at Graham's house, Jack McPhee, not Osborne, is about to usher out his latest conquest when Jen, within the kitchen sight line, holds him off until Graham's paces away on her phone call. When Joey returns to her dorm room, apparently the same one she and Audrey shared in their freshman year, which seems improbable to me, but again, I'm not a person of dorm experience, so I don't know if they give you back your old room.
I think some places they do, others they don't.
All right.
We had to find a new one every few years, but that wasn't always true. If you were an RA, you got to keep it.
Sure.
I don't know.
So when Joey re-enters, she sees Pacey on Audrey's bed. He blows through her greetings to say that no matter what he says when Audrey joins them, Joey cannot agree to him crashing there. So when Audrey returns from the can, Joey does what she was told, going on at length about the burping and farting she can't have Pacey doing when she has so much studying to do. Audrey shrugs that he'll have to stay at Graham's place then, and Pacey pretends to be offended that Joey would refuse him after everything they've been through. As Audrey's walking Pacey out to Graham's place, clip 7.
Oh, hey, what are we doing tonight?
Well, I don't know. We could go out and celebrate.
Aw, you want to celebrate my return to Worthington? That is so sweet, Joey.
Right, because that's the only thing we could potentially celebrate.
Obviously. All right, well, later, buddy.
Oh, everyone forgot.
Yeah, including the show, which never put it at this time ever, even though almost every season, not season 2, but every other season started at this exact time of year. And
yep.
She has known Dawson and Pacey her whole life, but sure.
And Pacey dated her.
Yeah.
Including when she was having a birthday. So.
Yeah. And when they were just the tipping it on the boat. That would have been a subject of discussion.
Mm-mm.
Not the tip part. Well, that too.
Joey has just gotten on the bed and cracked open Last Exit to Brooklyn when the phone rings. She lets the machine get it and hears Dawson leaving a message. He's in town if she wants to meet for coffee at 2. Joey tries to focus on the book, but then remembers whom the show is about and heads out. And then we're at Graham's. Jack's playing a football video game when Pacey comes down the stairs in Jack's suit. Jack commenting that it looks better on Pacey than it does on Jack. It does look very good. They are not the same size, so...
No, they sure aren't.
Sisterhood of the traveling suit vibes. After they've established that Pacey's on his way to interview for a job selling stocks, something he knows nothing about, but which Audrey's dad says he's perfectly suited for as a natural born hustler, Pacey plops down next to Jack and observes that this is what life at Graham's is like. Jack fills in that it's kind of lame and that he's having a hard time having a life there, spelling out when Pacey asks that he is talking about hooking up with guys, not that Pacey probably wants to hear about that. Pacey tells Jack not to censor himself on Pacey's account. He's a friend to the gays, but does Jack ever think about getting his own place? All the time, he just can't afford it. Pacey can't either, but maybe they could afford a place together. Jack has a knee-jerk objection to the idea of rooming with Pacey and then admits when Pacey presses that he can't actually think of any reasons that it wouldn't work. So cut to Pacey, back in his normal clothes, knocking on the door of an apartment from which drumming is emanating. Emma Jones, played by Megan Gray, opens the door. Pacey admires the very large apartment, which I think was previously used as Tom's office, possibly minus
maybe. It looked familiar to me, but I thought it was Danny's apartment that they just like repainted it and moved furniture around. But I mean, could be either or both.
I think it would have been harder to, well, I don't know. I don't remember where the stove was, but that place had a lot of like tile and I think the windows were different. But this was also, if it was not Tom's office, it was definitely the agent's office in that episode with Dawson and Oliver.
Oh, yeah. May also have been Mitch's loft. We'll look out for glass
could
break.
Be.
Oh, Mitch.
So Pacey then humiliates himself by A, randomly hitting various pieces of Emma's drum kit, and then B, asking if they're hers, making her snark that of course they're her boyfriend's because a woman couldn't possibly play a musical instrument. He apologizes and Emma asks if he's a student, which she is. She's at the Berklee School of Music, real school, unlike Boston Bay College and Worthington.
Mm-hmm.
Pacey says he's not a student. She asks about his finances. Telling her he has a job interview does not impress her. He mentions Jack, but Emma doesn't want to live with guys. Not when she has a gainfully employed lesbian couple coming to look at the place too. Clip 8.
But do you think that they could help you with the drum kit down the stairs every time you have a gig?
Well, from the look of them, yeah, they could. And they look better than you, in fact.
Hell yeah, get his ass, Debbie and Donna. Pacey says it's fine if Emma needs to emasculate him, but he would still love to bring Jack by. And she continues backing him out the door, and he continues trying to argue her out of her objections. Clip 9.
I'm not really understanding what it is that you're so fearful of here. Is it the sexual tension thing? Because I know that could be awkward, two guys and a girl living together, but I can pretty much guarantee that there is absolutely no possibility of either Jack or myself falling in love with you. Because that didn't come out right. But there's a good reason. Let me try again.
Look, it won't be necessary.
No, actually, what I'm saying is that neither...
Bugger off, chum.
But you see, he's gay.
Bugger off, chum.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Not bad. She was likable.
Mm. Yeah.
She wears the purple streaks well.
Yes, she does.
In class with Jen, Jack snaps to attention at the arrival of the aforementioned Professor Matt Freeman. And I guess Jen has a great view of his face when she comments that he's beautiful because his haircut and his baby blue polo shirt / tan dress pants are fighting against his facial beauty. Like, he is good looking in the face, but the outfit is so sexless.
No. Yeah, no. And he just is like square jaw central casting, like mm-hmm. nothing that special, in my opinion, yeah. But sure.
To me, he looks a little bit, he's played by Sebastian Spence. He looks a bit like Brad Rowe, who looks a lot like Brad
Pitt.
Yes! He's like two removed from Brad Pitt.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the third generation of that mimeograph.
Exactly.
Ask your grandparents.
This class is what I'm going to say is not challenging. Clip 10.
I'm betting you guys think it's going to be an easy ride. And when you look at some of the things we're going to be studying, things like the films of Keanu Reeves, the rise of the WB, and why reality TV shows are bad for the soul, you might still be under the assumption that it's going to be a cake.
They're asking me? Come on,
think
Adam,
again.
Where's Gaydar going?
I'm going to work you punks hard this semester, and we're going to get to the bottom.
How about $1 million?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm available to answer any questions at any time. Truth be told, I'm pretty much just like you guys, a pop culture junkie. Mm-hmm. My wife thinks I watch too much TV, and she's probably right. But I have a built-in excuse. It's my job.
Your wife still thinks that when you're a full professor? In apparently the Manitoba University system. We're going to get to the bottom. Okay. You are, eh? Cool.
Also, this class seems very slapped together. Like, those are three very different topics that he's laid out there. The films of Keanu Reeves could be its own class. You know, whether that's a tough class or is a different question. But whatever, as soon as the wife is mentioned, Jack says he'll take his winnings in hundreds. And then we're at the coffee shop where Joey has read about 4 pages of Last Exit to Brooklyn, probably because she's been too busy looking for Dawson in every direction. And she checks her watch, and when we see it's 10 to 3, she leaves. And then we're in Hetson's lit class where he's already mid-lecture. Still in his flip-flops, and I'm sorry, but if you're at the professor level, your students should not know what your toes look like. That's just how I feel.
Yeah. Anything below the ankle needs to be a mystery.
Yeah. Especially if they're not even nice flip-flops. They're like just rubber Old Navy jobs.
Yeah. Like, just, yeah. And they're like teal, which I actually found. It was like the one endearing thing that I was like, all right, that's weird, but okay.
So Joey lets herself into the classroom. He makes a big production of stopping to greet her and make sure she's taken the seat she wants before resuming, which is, of course, when her phone rings like 15 times. She struggles to figure out how to silence it. Hetson says if she's not going to turn it off, she could at least answer. Joey feebly says she doesn't want to be rude, so Hetson takes the call, saying Joey is otherwise occupied, and then gets back to it, sort of. Clip 11.
So, where were we?
Yeah, you know what?
Before I forget, Joey, turns out Dawson couldn't make it. He was a little crazed, but he wants to meet you and the gang at Hell's Kitchen at like 8:30. Okay?
Thanks.
My pleasure.
Oh my God. No. Throw the phone and her at the window.
Yes. Hudson then asks everyone's thoughts on last exit to Brooklyn, of course, turning straight to Joey when no one else volunteers. She shamefully admits she only got through one vignette. Wow, says Hudson. It's only the first day and already Joey's broken a promise and cuts her off when she tries to apologize. What did she think of what she did manage to read? Oh boy, strap in for more of Joey's amazing literary criticism, clip 12.
I thought that it was heartbreaking. I mean, the people, they're doomed. It's like a world where the sun never shines.
You. What's your name? Hello?
Right, yeah, Eddie. My name's Eddie.
Eddie, hi, Eddie. What's your beef, Eddie?
I got no beef.
Oh, no, that's crap. I sense an opposing viewpoint.
No. No, I just,
Well, come on, out with it.
I don't know, I just feel like it's a little condescending to feel sorry for these people. I mean, who says there can't be beauty in a world where the sun doesn't shine?
You've read the whole book, haven't you, Eddie?
Yeah. Yeah, years ago. It's awesome.
Well, you've got one up on Miss Potter anyway. So, moving on.
Do you want to maybe teach the class?
What is happening?
Push them for any insight?
Yeah.
Ugh, yeah. God.
I mean, especially considering the writers, probably at least half of them are English majors, that they can't come up with anything better than, what did you think of book?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Why does this have to be the play? Like, Joey is a brilliant student and writer. Let's see her in action. Like, I'd really rather not, especially since it's always about professors hitting on her. Barf.
Yes. The second voice we heard there was Oliver Hudson playing Eddie, looking so young. It was not really that long ago, but like the difference between Katie Holmes then and now and him then and now, it's like someone's been out skiing without sunscreen on. I'll just guess that. At Hell's Kitchen, which I guess is going to be the new civilization in terms of the third place that everyone gathers at this season, Pacey's shooting pool, or rather shooting the cue ball off the table, when it is then caught by Emma, who's waiting tables. Pacey introduces her to Audrey, making a big deal of calling her his girlfriend, so Emma will see there's no danger in having him live with her. When he asks Audrey to confirm his claims, she refuses because Emma is hot and she doesn't want him living with a hot girl. Okay. Pacey then introduces his gay friend, Jack, who says hello with a mouthful of food. Emma says he doesn't look very gay, but she believes Jack when he says he is. She just doesn't care. And then Joey rolls up to Hell's Kitchen without a tote or a clutch or a tiny backpack, not even a phone clipped to her belt. And you know the pockets on those low-rise jeans are too shallow to hold anything more than a dime.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever, she spots all the friends we have seen thus far in the episode and smiles. But when we see her again, she's moping at the jukebox. Apparently, as we learn, Pacey comes over because it hasn't played her song yet. Pacey says that's probably because the jukebox rejected it amid all the other angry chick music it has already played tonight. Joey says, "Bite me," and he takes a fake chomp of her arm that she calls gross, wiping off a little too obnoxiously. Like, guys, fucked. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Would not be this weird with each other.
Yeah, you're not 14 anymore. Calm down.
She then asks why Pacey told her earlier not to let him stay in the dorm room. He asks if she remembers what it was like when they had their summer and how they came back all lovey-dovey and didn't want it to end. Joey pretends not to agree with this characterization, but yes. And he says he's actually very ready for this summer to end, not because he didn't have fun, but because Hollywood Audrey, who dragged him to a different party full of phonies every night, is a little exhausting. As Pacey's friend, Joey understands, but as Audrey's roommate, if he breaks Audrey's heart, Joey will break his face. So stay tuned for heart being broken. This is definitely happening. Back at the table, Joey asks where Dawson is. Audrey calls him Godot Leary, when I think it's more like Godot, but I'm not sure. I did not study that. And says he was like that all summer, out of the house before they got up and never home earlier than midnight. Audrey tells Joey and all of us that Todd, the director who fired Dawson one season premiere ago, hired Dawson to be his assistant this summer. Joey, the only person anywhere who gives a shit about Oliver, asks what happened to him, and Audrey says he flipped out, hated LA, said he could literally see his soul leaving his body, and left a note on Dawson's pillow that he would see Dawson in hell. Audrey is surprised Joey didn't already talk to Dawson herself at some point over the summer. Joey evasively says she meant to, as Jen and Jack look alarmed, and Audrey curtly says, interesting. Joey goes to check on her song, and at the jukebox, a drunk dude is complaining that it ate his dollar. Emma says it's not a vending machine. He asks if she's getting smart with him, which she calls unavoidable. And when Joey joins them, he asks what she's looking at, and she sniffs a drunk guy with his fly open. When he has shambled off, Emma and Joey compliment each other's heckles. Joey says working in a place like this in high school turned her into a surly wench. Emma says they're looking for one if she wants a job. And Queen Joey gives her second job offer of the day, another maybe. Back at the table, Dawson still is not there. Pacey says he has to go. Jen and Jack sit in silence, watching Audrey shriek at Pacey for being an amateur. If she were hiring, she would want to see a guy with suitcases under his eyes, reeking of booze and sex. But Pacey's still going to go. Audrey doesn't like the new Pacey. What happened to the Pacey of yore? He just drove 3,000 miles in 2 days and is tired. Isn't she? And doesn't she have a class tomorrow? She does, but she also has priorities. And Pacey needs to sleep, so he leaves and has barely gotten a yard away from the door when Audrey materializes behind him. He implores her to let him rest, but she's about to tell him something that's going to make him feel like a real jerk. She got them a room in the swankiest hotel in town, and when they get there, she really will let him sleep. He just wants to make a good impression tomorrow because he doesn't want to let down Audrey's father or Audrey herself. She doesn't need him to get serious. They can go rest, but now he's not so strict they need to be about the whole rest thing because, you know, hotel sex. Back at the table, Joey's telling Jen and Jack her employment options are the job with the cranky prof that's good for her academic career or the server job that's good for tips. Jen says there's no question the Joey they both know will take the sensible path of working with Professor Cranky Pants, and Joey pretends to be offended that they've profiled her as a nerd. Jen and Jack announce they're heading out, and when Joey says she'll stick around a little longer, they both give her knowing looks. She pretends not to understand. And she sits there through a whole montage of watching the door and finally leaves. But no sooner has she crossed the street than Dawson's getting out of a cab, yelling her name, and she gives him the tongueful smile that just made it to the credits. And after commercials, there's back inside at the bar, clip 13.
All right, so guess what?
What?
The guess.
You're gay.
That. And I was on the phone with Steven Spielberg the other day.
Okay, some people want to live in the moment of Dawson saying he's gay for a little bit longer, probably.
I kind of liked that line delivery. He's sure. Like, yeah, but anyway.
Uh-huh.
Like, just kept stepping.
Yeah.
Oh.
The Spielberg story was just that he called for Todd, which, LOL, sure he did.
Yeah, and seriously.
Dawson asked Spielberg to wait a moment as Dawson passed him on with shaking hands. Dawson thought he was going to miss Joey at the bar. And if that's the case, maybe you could have called her on your cell phone to her cell phone because it's 2002 and you both have cell phones.
Truly.
Joey claims she only stayed to hear her song on the jukebox. He is now working on a horror movie. Todd prefers to call it a Hitchcockian thriller, but Dawson doesn't think it's accurate. And then there's a hard subject change. Clip 14.
You look great, by the way.
Thank you.
I don't say things like that nearly enough. The second I saw you, I thought to myself, God, she looks great. But I didn't say anything, so I'm saying it now.
Is this some player routine you workshopped in LA over the summer?
Can a guy not tell a girl that she looks great without there being some sort of manipulation involved?
Generally, no.
Okay, good point. But this is you and me. General rules do not apply to you and me. Never have.
What?
Well, you don't observe them. It doesn't mean they don't apply.
Yes. First of all, she looks the same. Secondly, if you were this hung up on her, why didn't you call her one time this summer, which is basically what Joey then asks, but nicely. And he says this, clip 15.
Quick and easy answer would be that I was really, really busy and there just wasn't any time. Which is true, but it's not really it. Because I thought about you all the time. And about what you said, about how everything would just kind of work itself out between us. And I just made me feel so good about us. It just, I guess I didn't want to ruin that feeling. Does it make any sense?
No. I still don't know if you guys want to fuck.
I mean, as sort of not even contrived, but I guess, you know, we'll go with that. But when he had his whole speech in the previous season about, like, you know, you bring me back to a place where I was with my intact family of origin and it just hurts to see you.
Yeah.
That was like maybe a little bit higher order thinking than a college freshman would be able to articulate, but it's this show and it did actually make sense, even if it's like a little evolved for, you know, whatever, a 19-year-old. But this, you know, on this show doesn't, like, either acknowledge that they have cell phones and email and he didn't use any means, or I don't know, don't do a summer break. There's just so many ways to do this better and not draw attention to the fact that you didn't think it through.
Right. Essentially, this ends up being the same as, like, you were both just sitting in your charging stations waiting until you were in each other's presence again. Mm-hmm. And it's also so obvious that these finale resets on their, like, romance are in case they get a shock cancellation or something. And then the top of every season is undoing what they sort of did because these two are not destined. Although this one's a little different, unfortunately. Yes. But whatever. Stupid Joey claims that what Dawson just said makes a lot of sense. It doesn't. She thinks they might be growing up, which Dawson says sounds boring, but Joey doesn't think it has to be bad. Her case in point is that he seems different, like he's living his dream, agrees with him. He's not sure if fetching lattes and dealing with Todd's car qualifies, but Joey says he knows what he means. What she means, rather. And he finally remembers to ask about her summer, like whether she met anyone. No one worth mentioning, she says, and has just asked him the same question when her song comes on. It's As I Lay Me Down by Sophie B. Hawkins. Of course, there's a whole little Joey Potter story attached. After she and Dawson went to see Clueless, it was raining like crazy. Gail was there to pick them up, but her car was all the way on the other side of the street, which is in Cape Side, where I'm pretty sure no road is more than two lanes wide. So Dawson grabbed Joey's hand and ran, and all Joey could think about afterward was that he held her hand. And the reason she associated the song with that night is that it was playing in Gail's car. And I checked, and the timing doesn't line. The song came out in February 95, and Clueless was that summer.
Mm-hmm.
Dawson asks Joey to dance and they take the floor just as the song gets to the line that makes me hate it. Clip 16. No! I guess her name's not Scansion B. Hawkins, but you can't do that.
Yeah.
It's so bad. No. It's like, oh, makes my skin crawl. It's so wrong.
Yeah.
And happy I will wake. There you go. And I will wake up glad. There's two options. But whatever. It plays and eats clock as they sway in little circles, smiling at each other, not kissing. And at her dorm room door later, Joey thanks Dawson for walking her back and tells him he doesn't have to go. Audrey's with Pacey tonight, so he could take her bed. You know, like the offer you would make to your brother. Dawson tries to decline, but she doesn't want him walking around out there this late trying to get a cab. So she goes into the bathroom, leaving Dawson to exhale pointedly. But when she comes out of the can, Dawson's already passed out on Audrey's Muppet fur pillow. Joey gets into bed quietly and lies there in wakeful readiness until Dawson mumbles that he fell asleep. She tells him to get some sleep. They can talk in the morning, but he asks the time. It's 5 to 12, so Dawson gets up and moves the clock hands past midnight. He's cheating because he doesn't want to wait anymore. He pulls a gift bag out of his knapsack, wishing her a happy birthday. She says he's the only one who remembered, and then reaches in and pulls out a Hollywood snow globe. I don't know why he was so excited to give her something he clearly bought at LAX on his way to his gate. He at least says it's cheesy, but Joey says it's perfect. It would be a perfect gift for him. Her thing is supposedly books now.
Like, yeah. Get her an Amherst snow globe. Come on.
Yeah. And the way he sees her is kind of perfectly encapsulated in what he says next, clip 17.
You know what you were saying before about how living my dream agrees with me? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about that, and I want you to know that probably would not be living any dream at all if it weren't for you. I mean, more and more I keep on finding myself in these incredibly surreal situations. And every time, I just kind of in the back of my head just think, what would Joey think if she could see me right now? No. I guess everyone has someone who challenges them and makes them shoot for something just beyond their reach. You're that person for me.
So in other words, this is a gift to thank Joey for making Dawson great, right? Is that what we both heard? Okay, great.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Also, if you wonder what she would think if she could see you right now, call her and fucking ask her.
Yeah. Like, if you're getting up before dawn, call her on your way to wherever you're going. The time difference would work out perfectly, I would think. Oh, God. Anyway.
Yeah.
He says they didn't talk all summer and they might find themselves talking less and less, but he doesn't feel it. Joey's with him everywhere he goes. The idea of her as his rock, not her as an actual person with her own ambitions or like a conscious other living person who he could converse with almost anytime he feels like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He wishes her a happy birthday again, and Joey stares at the snow globe for a while before setting it on her nightstand and leaning forward to hug him at an angle, by the way, where her boobs are nowhere near touching him at all.
No.
You see this in the visual aids. Their crotches could not be further apart and then both be in the same room touching.
Yeah. The only, like, there could be like a, you know, drop down into beach position, but it's just awkward. Like,
yes.
That's not a sustained hug.
No.
Position.
No.
My leg fell asleep looking at her.
But they hold each other for a while as their little friendship theme from the score ends. And the hug then goes on with Dawson starting to caress Joey's back. And the camera cuts to her face over his shoulder. And her expression, I mean, tell me if I read this wrong. She looks concerned, if not alarmed, that this is happening. She does not look into it.
No.
Okay. Because we've seen her look horny before. She can do it.
This was not that.
No.
She looks like she heard a mouse in the wall. That was the face.
Does. So Dawson just has his eyes squeezed closed rapturously. And finally, Joey seems to decide not to fight what's going to happen. I don't mean that in a consent way. I just mean, like, I guess, you know.
This is the narrative in season six way.
Oh, exactly. So she breaks the clinch and looks at Dawson and they stare at each other. It takes them about 30 seconds to start kissing. And the song that started playing after the score ended is called Your Love by Laura Doyle. It goes like this, clip 18.
You're everything that I want, and maybe that's what I'm afraid of.
It also sounds like really suspense-y, like before the lyrics come in.
Yeah.
It's like, and where is the mouse? Mm-hmm. We've heard the mouse. Where is it? Is it going to crawl the bed? Is it on her pillow? Is it her bad leg?
And then this is the chorus, guys. I'm sorry, but that's what they chose. Clip 19. Love.
It's really a lot of pressure on Dawson.
Yeah, but I guess he does because that's the end of the episode. Let's close it up by naming our MVP. I'm going to say Jack. At least he's getting lots of action and he deserves.
That was on my list, but I'll fill in with Emma, who's just like, okay, Pacey, no, not with that goatee in this economy. Fuck out of here.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Least valuable player. Jack Osborne.
The Worthington English Department. Both hiring and like promoting, social promoting fucking little Joey Potter. Mm-hmm. What are we doing?
Yeah, the English department is good. I don't know why they keep making full professors out of like 28-year-olds, but whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Jack and the absent Ozzy Osbourne, because yuck.
Mm-hmm.
Gross. That's your neighbor.
Ew. Good call. Hmm. Next time on Again With This, me. fucked. But they're not going to jinx it by talking about it. But they're not going to jinx it by talking about it, which is fine with me. Also, Pacey kicks off his boiler room arc. He and Jack score a spot in Emma's apartment, and Jen meets a Winchester. You should consider meeting some Maalox before visiting our visual aids. That's the important screenshots and GIFs that we do for every episode of the podcast, all three shows and into the future. You can find those along with the full archive of the episodes themselves and more information about the pledge drive. Very important. That's on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm Quick and Easy Answer, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is That Person For You, Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, will whisper your name into the sky and he will wake up glad. Talk to you next time.
Do you like my shoes?